we're on the names of God. And I looked up sort of the beginning of the week to find out what name I was down to do. And it said Alpha and Omega. And I kind of thought, because it's one of these things you've kind of read before. And oh yeah, God's Alpha and Omega. In case, for anyone who didn't know, Alpha is the first letter of the Greek alphabet and Omega is the last. So it's kind of, he's the beginning of the alphabet and the last one, and he's the beginning and the end. And that's something I've read, and it's one of these things you go, oh yeah, yeah, beginning and end. Okay, do you want to speak about it for 10, 15 minutes? Oh. But actually, it's been really good, because sometimes it's good to be forced to focus your brain on something that you wouldn't choose to. It's not something I'd choose to actually have ever chosen to think about before. And then if you've got to speak about it, well, you've got to do a bit of thinking and imagining. So this is a meditation, in effect, on the meaning of God as the Alpha and Omega. What's the actual meaning of the picture? Well, obviously, implication, if God is the beginning and the end, he's sort of everything in between. But that raises the question, why is this expressed in terms of the Greek alphabet? What's that all about? What do we use alphabets for? Well, we use letters to make words. And we use words to, they bring meaning and they bring order, and we use them to name things, and we use them to negotiate our way around the world. So it's about, he's the beginning and end. It's something to do with meaning as well. So let's imagine you had only half access to half the letters of the alphabet, and someone gave you a book or a newspaper to read. So you, let's say you understood a third or a half of the words. Well, you might get tantalizing glimpses as to what it's about, but you would not get the full picture by any means. You might get a little bit of understanding, but you'd be left sort of frustrated. I think the implication is that God has the whole alphabet of history, because he is the beginning and the end. He's got the A and the Z and all the letters in between. So how does this relate to the book of Revelation? Well, it's literally called in Greek the apocalypse, and apocalypse is not doesn't necessarily mean a massive catastrophe, although there does seem to be quite a few sort of ongoing catastrophes in Revelation. It literally means an uncovering, a revealing. And there's a key moment in this vision. Julia, if we can have the first reading. And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll with writing on both sides and sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming in a loud voice, "Who is worthy to break open the seals and open the scroll?" But no one in heaven or earth or under the earth could open the scroll or even look inside it. I wept and wept because no one was found who was worthy to open the scroll or look inside. Now, this is, you've got a picture dreaming. This is like a dream. And when you have dreams, things happen and you really feel the emotion of it. And sometimes you can't explain why. They speak to us on a subjective level. Some of them are just random, but the really meaningful ones speak to us on a subjective level. They speak to our instincts and our emotions rather than our head. So what's going on here? You picture yourself, you're in heaven. There's a king of heaven. And if he's got this scroll in his hands, that's something really, really significant and meaning, and everything's hanging on this. What's this scroll? And why would you weep because no one could open it? Well, the scroll is something that gives you the meaning. It gives you the answers. It's like someone tells you a riddle or a puzzle. And then when someone gives you a riddle, they'll present the riddle to you, and then they'll say, "Okay, have a think about it." And you have a think about it, and your mind goes round and round and round and round and round. And as more you go round and round, you can't get the answer, unless you're one of these genius types. And then you're kind of, "Come on, tell me the answer! Tell me the answer!" And then when it gives you, oh, yes, that's the answer. And that's kind of life, is sometimes people feel like that. It's a riddle, what's going on? And it, particularly when terrible things happen. We had some terrible news, didn't we? We had in the those of us at the church meeting for Jamie and Marin. You know, terrible thing happened to them. Just this fire, I don't know whether it was arson or something, you know, they lost that they're in Paraguay doing really good work. They just lose everything to a fire. What's going on? Of course, you know, our first, you know, we've got the natural response. Well, what can we do to help them? And as we are doing to help, we, you know, we are doing what we can to help them. We may need to do more. That's the first. But in our minds, certainly in my mind, and I would guess in a lot of other, there's another question. Why? What's the meaning? There's a very, very deep thing going on within us that wants to make sense of our experience, because when we can make sense, we can see the meaning. And when there's meaning, there's purpose. And when there's a purpose, it makes life worth living. And without purpose, life is not worth living. That's a very deep human instinct embedded in us all, which the dream is tapping into. This is like telling us we're going to see terrible events unfold as we read through Revelation. And the scroll is trying to give us, well, this is the key, this is the meaning. It's not completely random. So do we get to see what's written in the scroll? And of course, for those who read on, the scroll is opened by the Lion of Judah. Now, there are many people who, if you'd ask them what the purpose of life, the universe and everything is, and the meaning of history, they wouldn't pretend to be able to give you the answer. They might jokingly say 42, for those of you who remember Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But yeah, they don't necessarily ask those questions. They don't feel there is a particular overall meaning. They would get their, they would say probably a lot of them, their meaning and purpose from their family, their job. Some of them might say, well, the purpose of life is to enjoy it. So people enjoy their friends and their hobbies and they're going out for a drink and they find meaning and purpose in their family and jobs. And I think for people who life turns out reasonably nice in, they've got a certain type of temperament, they don't particularly necessarily worry about the deeper questions of life and the meaning of history. That they feel that's enough for them. And there's actually Ecclesiastes has a particular sort of comment on those sort of people. Do you want to give me the, the next reading. It's a very kind of insight into how some people operate. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. And there are people like that. There's no getting away from it. But there's another side to the story. I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity, or it's really a but he has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. Yes, there are people who can go on with life and they can sort of block the deeper questions off. But there are plenty of other people out there for whom the deeper questions gnaw away. They may be suppressed for a lot of the time, but when tragedy hits or something incomprehensible happens, up come the questions. You go to the doctor tells you, you've got advanced pancreatic cancer, which has spread through the body. I'm afraid we haven't seen this in time. You've got 3 months to live. Up comes the questions. Why? What's the meaning of this? However under the surface these questions are, they will always find their way up to the surface, and sometimes in ways that are not at all nice. Since throwing over Christianity and God, Western culture has in effect created a vacuum. And if you're fortunate enough in your life, well, you can live with that. But what the impact, if you live with that and you're not seeking for the deeper questions, what you're doing is life may be fine for you, but you're taking your part in maintaining the vacuum. And you're effectively saying to people, we're not going to offer you an overall sense of meaning. If you die, that's it. There's nothing, or if there is anything, we don't know, have no idea what it is. So you better get everything in before you die. By the way, if you haven't got nice family and friends, you haven't got a great career, and you die, well, that's it. The point I'm making is that when Western culture threw off the shackles of Christianity, the modern world created a vacuum. And for people who are content, they're fine and daddy for them, that's okay. But nature abhors a vacuum. And like the sweeping out of the house in the parable, the house is swept out, it's empty, and in come the demons. And people come in, and there'll be certain people who are not content with that, and what they will want to fill that vacuum. And what will they fill it with? They will fill it with their own ideas. And it won't be just ideas that they want to live out privately, because people want a sense of meaning that goes beyond their private lives. You want the history of which you are part to have meaning, so that you feel that you are part of a greater overall purpose. How else did communism come about? It came about to fill the gap. How else did Nazism come about? It was a whole view of history. Marx got it into his head that he had the key to the whole of history. He marked it out in six stages. And we had the stage of feudalism, and we were on the stage of capitalism, which I believe is the fourth stage. And then he knew exactly what the fifth stage was going to be. There was the workers were going to revolt, and then the workers were going to be on top. And then all the bourgeois and all the people who'd been on the top were going to be on the bottom. And the workers were going to rule themselves. The workers were going to rule. How is that supposed to happen? Well, you have the workers of the communes, they have their little local Soviets, and they get together to decide what should happen. And technically speaking, all that should feed up from the bottom to the dear leader at the top. And the dear leader at the top presumably takes his cue from all the little Soviet workers, communes down the bottom who are telling him, well, of course, it didn't quite work out like that. That was supposed to, oh, by the way, there was what's supposed to be one stage after that, which is supposed to be the classless paradise, where basically everyone's in charge, no one's in charge. How's that supposed to happen? Well, it just will. Marx had a faith. He'd worked it all out, and millions of people were forced to live out a system inspired by his understanding of history. What should we compare this with? Imagine the whole history as an alphabet going from A to Z. And if you want to write the book of history, you've got to have access to the whole alphabet. So here we are. We are born into the middle of this history. And let's say we're born at O, and we've got, we live till P, so we've got two letters to play with. Okay, two letters to write our book and say, we think we've known a bit of history. So we've got another two, three letters we think before then, say J or K and B. So we've got our book to write with. So a bunch of people with five or six letters think they're going to start telling the world they can write the book of history and they know what it's about. They know the purpose. They know where it's going. What's more, they've written a book about it and everyone must read this book. That literally happened. Marx wrote a book called Das Kapital. Okay, it's only got words you can make out of the letter B, F, J, O, and P, but look, that doesn't matter. We know what it's all about. How do you know what it's all about? Well, we just do. Now, it may sound ridiculous, but I think what it shows is the thirst to get an overall sense of meaning, an overall sense of purpose of history is so great that when you get a vacuum, people will pluck ideas out of their own head. And a whole lot of other people will be drawn and believe it. And the people who are just in the vacuum get swept along. That's what happened with communism. That's what happened with Nazism. So Communism has come and gone, but we have the new ideology. We have the social justice warriors, we have the Black Lives Matters, we have the transgender activists, we have the LGBTQ lobbyists, who've been so successful that lots of children who would never have thought about it before now realize it, they don't know what sex they are, or their body is one sex or their feelings are another. These people think they have the key. Now, let's be charitable and say that if you've got six letters of the alphabet to play with and you want to write a book, you can actually make real words. You can actually make real words from six letters, particularly if you're good at Scrabble, and you can make words that actually mean something. So when people, these campaigners, say these things, we shouldn't write off everything they say. When people say that gays had a tough time through history, they've got a point. Gays really did have a tough time through history. I was at school and someone who was right or wrongly pointed out as being having that orientation, his life was made a misery. People who had the orientation weren't given help. They didn't know what to do with their lives. The strong people survived, the weaker people went to the wall. When people say that society was patriarchal, they had a point. Victorian women had absolutely no rights. If they had an abusive husband, there was nothing they could do. She was effectively his possession. She had no money. She couldn't get a divorce. When people say minorities were persecuted and misunderstood, they've got a point, a genuine point. That's happened through history. Minorities get exploited and persecuted. And yes, a small percentage of people suffer from gender dysphoria. And a smaller section of those people, that problem carried on beyond childhood and teens into full adulthood. But this is not just about certain people identifying certain problems that have happened through history and not been dealt with, which they want to see sorted out. No. This is about people who think that they know what it's all about. They know what the true meaning of history is. It's a journey from darkness to light, and they have the key as to how to reach the light. They know exactly where the darkness was and what it was and why it was there. White patriarchal power and oppression, from which every problem, most of the other problems we ever had stemmed, bringing repression, forcing people into straitjackets. They've decided they know that heterosexual lifelong marriage is oppression, and that there are saying that just two sexes, male and female, that you're born into, one or the other, and you have to stick with their life, is darkness, oppression, and constriction. Finding the light, they've decided, is freeing people from to find their true identity, from which there can be any number of gender identities invented by themselves and changeable through the course of their life. But it's not just about gender identity. We need to keep tearing down the boundaries, wherever they are. Boundaries are bad news. Total freedom is good news. But of course, what we find is other boundaries seem to get put into their place and people get caught out and in trouble. So we see how only a small percentage of people with a strong ideology, as happened in the past, are able to come into the vacuum and fill this. They fill the universities and schools with their ideology, and have had governments who are floating about in the vacuum, kowtowing. In a land where there is no alphabet of meaning, people with five letters become kings. So where are we as Christians in all this? We haven't lived through history any more than anyone else has. And so we don't have all the letters of the alphabet to write the book of history any more than anyone else does. But we belong to a God who is able to write the book of history, because he is Alpha and Omega. And he's able to impart to us some sense of what is going on, which can help us bring some sense of meaning to our lives. That's partly what the book of Revelation is about. We have some idea of the pattern of things. We certainly don't have the full picture. We certainly can't explain everything, but we've got enough to be going on our journey, and we know where we are and the world are ultimately headed. We know that if we belong to a God, we belong to an overall story, and God has a place for us in that story, a good place. The God who has the alphabet of history is able to write that history and bring it to fulfillment. He has an inheritance for us. And we know that we can trust God in the things that happen which we don't understand. I'm thinking again of Jamie and Maren. Now, I think, imagine anyone in that situation, I'm sure they will be knocked for six, but they are people of faith. If you were to ask them now, and they say, well, we still don't understand why that's happened, but they will say, we have faith that God's good purposes still carry on, that God can bring good out of this. And maybe in 10, 15 years, they will look back on this and say something along the lines of, well, it was incredibly painful, but actually, out of that, so almost like being reduced to ground zero, other things came up, things that wouldn't have happened otherwise. Maybe. But we shouldn't assume that when we get to the end of the life, there'll be all the things in our life which we'll be able to understand. Everything will be resolved. There's some things about my life which I look back at and I still don't understand. But I can leave that with God. Whatever happens, I know I have my place in the story. I, along with all the other people of God, have an inheritance waiting for us. Now, Christians can be a bit glib about this. I've heard the phrase, God has a perfect plan for your life. Well, I think when some people look at some people, you know, including my own experience and other people, that feels rather glib. Life hasn't turned that all beautifully. We can't necessarily see the pattern in everything that's happened. Not everything we can see has been resolved. And there's some Christians for whom they get to the end of the life and there's plenty of stuff unresolved. We look at the life of King David. He got the second half of his life, got very, very messy. Lots of stuff was not resolved when he died. But everything doesn't hang on that. Everything doesn't hang on whether everything is resolved at the end of our lives. Our place in history, the future, and God's purpose does not depend on that. Whatever gets resolved in this life, whatever doesn't get resolved, God is the Alpha and the Omega, and we belong to God. We belong to a history which God is bringing to fulfillment with our ultimate place in it assured. So then, no more boasting. No more boasting of human ideas. All things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or the present or the future. All are yours, and you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. Amen.